Listening Dog Media.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Rocket with Kieran Bracken and Nick Easter. The rugby podcast that doesn't take itself too seriously.
Hi and welcome to Rocket. My name is Kieran Bracken. People know me from playing rugby, former player, 51 caps for England, retired in 03, having won the World Cup. But most people nowadays know me from winning Dancing on Ice or my little excursion into Friends, if you've seen the episode. But my co-host, Mr. Nick Easter, I was told that when we were on TV together, we had a lot of chemistry, which is a bit worrying. But welcome to Nick Easter. Nick, tell us about yourself.
Hello, Brax. Thank you very much for being on here. Look, we're in the 2020s now. There's nothing wrong with a bit of man chemistry and a bit of man love going on. Myself, retired England player, 54 caps, played in three World Cups, got to a final, didn't quite get over the line like Kieran did over there. And played at Harlequins, you know, one club man in the Premiership. Retired in 2016, went into the world of coaching, continued at my club at Harlequins, and just come back from 18 months in South Africa. And in the meantime, filling my time during the day, you know, going into a couple of companies, doing a bit of consultation, also expanding my knowledge as far as coaching goes, and a little bit of property investment. But I suppose a little bit more on that, because I think with your past history with Saracens, Brax, you might have a little bit more insight and actually advice for me, probably not on air, about property investment and reinvestment and everything, having, you know, got into it probably at a young age, like a lot of the boys.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I believe it or not, I've just come from an interview. I'm trying to get a job in the city now, because all I know, seriously, all I know is property. I got a timber frame company with my brother, invested in property, got stuff in Ireland, and that didn't go very well. But I'm interested in the city now, so I'll tell you how that interview goes or whether I got the job next time round. But, you know, it's funny. Who came up with this name, by the way? Rocket. I mean, I thought we agreed on fuck it, but Rocket probably is a bit more appropriate. The other names were Rugby Heart, In Touch, Rugby Pulse, Pick It Up, and we finalised on Rocket. But what I really like is the caricature that has been created, right? Listen, the caricature be created for Rocket. And if you noticed, somebody's added hair to my face. I do look like Tim Nice But Dim, but they've added hair to my face. And I'm so chuffed. I showed my wife and she said, that's not you. That was you 15 years ago, which it was. But you look all right. You've got a bit of grey beard.
Mate, mine seems to be actually of the modern times, is all I'm saying. He's taken a picture. Whoever's done this appalling drawing's taken a picture, and I seem to have about three chins and a huge jowl.
Hang on a second. No, that's not. Taken, hey, that's pretty accurate. I'm not being funny.
It might be accurate.
You just said you feel
you're trying to make friends early in this podcast, aren't we?
We had to get a special chair for you to sit on without squeaking. That's how heavy you are coming back from South Africa.
Muscle weighs more than fat. We all know that, don't we?
So should we talk about rugby? And you know, a bit like Brexit, I suppose, with me being a Saracen, you got a chance to give me some stick about Saracens, relegation, the wage cap, and everything. I mean, look. My house out in Biarritz that I've just come back from has nothing to do with this.
Is it your house? Is it Nigel's or one of the directors?
Oh, do you know what? I'm so embarrassed. I came out about a month ago, not quite like that. I came out and said that, I said, listen, I think it's unfair. I think it's only because they've won trophies that they're making an example of them. And And then, you know, at each step, Saracens just kept taking a... their PR. Then they agree to relegation. They get Ed Griffiths involved, who, by the way, fired me from Saracens. That's a separate story. They get him involved. And then after 26 days, he gets the boot because he's been doing dodgy things with the cricket lot. I'm allowed to say that with lawyers in the room. But, well, you know, subject to review what he's been up to. But
Allegedly.
But I just can't believe they got him back involved and then fired him. I mean, it's just a PR disaster. So, but on Ed Griffiths, he fired me and Richard Hill from Saracens. Mm. And it's quite a funny story because I was doing the hosting and Richard was head of the academy, and I was doing the hosting at Twickenham for the doubleheader against you guys at Harlequins.
No, it wasn't the hosting at Saracens then.
No,
on
not
behalf of Mario Itoju, who didn't turn up.
Not that
hospitality.
Shut up. Listen, the only dodgy thing I ever did with Saracens is when I was trying to get my contract upped and they wouldn't up the salary, and I said, all right, look, insure my car. And they said, okay, and I signed the contract and I bought a DB7. Right, which cost them about $5,000. They weren't happy. But then I crashed it. I crashed the car, $40,000's worth of damage, and basically they had to pull all the insurance from all the players, and no one knew why, and that was me. But Ed Griffiths, how did I get fired? I go up on stage, and I said, it was just after they lost to Northampton the year before, and I said, oh, Ed, great to be up here, and, you know... but by the way, you must be disappointed at the moment. South Africa losing to New Zealand because at the time, the championship. And he said, Kieran, I'm not South African. And I was like, what? I've seen you pull pints and eating biltong. You're definitely South African. He said, no, I'm Scottish. So I started ripping the piss out of him. And then the next day he said, I think your time here has ended. You don't follow the values of Saracens. What irony. And then and I told him to ruck it, basically.
He told you that, did he?
Yeah, he told me that, and I said, well, do you know
probably
what?
Probably because you wouldn't want to take any dodgy payments.
Mate. No, is that all over?
Yeah, you've got a bit of integrity about you, haven't you?
But I just can't believe it. Look, they got relegated. And it's seismic, isn't it? Because we're here to talk about Six Nations, and really interesting, you know, how the players are feeling about it. But it's massive. And what I think we talked earlier, what's really interesting is, you know, is the Premiership now a dead rubber apart from... You know, the top four are going to the final. You know, it'd be interesting to see if the sort of interest is there anymore for now that they're relegated.
I think this will put a bit of closure to that argument, won't it, about ring fencing? I think because there's quite a bit of the Premiership to go because of the World Cup is actually going longer, so there's a substantial part of the season left. And I'm a big fan of not ring fencing and having relegation in there. Always have been, and actually,
because you got relegated, you're part of the reason you got relegated in 2005, wasn't it? Is that when you first? How many years were you there?
I cost too little back then, mate. I cost too little.
Were you captain? Who's captain? Please say
Andre Vos, mate. And Andre, he's one of the best captains I've ever worked for, to be honest.
Yeah.
And ironically, actually, we had an ex-Saracens DOR as our DOR, Mark Evans. But we won't get into that.
What was it like? What was it like suddenly playing against Leicester and then you go,
it was a brilliant year. It was brilliant. I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why. Because Mark Evans, brilliant CEO.
Yeah, I love Mark Evans.
And director of rugby. Two jobs, which you look at it now and you think, that is absolutely crazy. A director of rugby now... actually has to apportion a lot of his responsibilities to a head coach if you look in the Premiership. Mm. So to do those two jobs. And look, rightly so, we got relegated. You know, we were the worst over the course of the year. It was a nail-biter, went down to the last, there was three games where I think Northampton, Worcester, us or Leeds could have gone down. And unfortunately, we just got pipped by Sale at home. I won't mention all the missed kicks that happened from our fly half. Anyway, we went down, and at the time, Dean Richards had signed to take over as director of rugby. Absolute legend of the game, won multiple championships.
Brought his blood caps down with him.
Yeah, brought his blood. We'll get to that.
Sorry,
we'll get to that.
Come on.
He came down. Andrew Mertens signed.
Yeah, wow.
He promised to stay.
The big dogs apparently are staying at Saracens.
Voss, all of those guys, they stayed. And it was brilliant, mate, because at the end of the day, when you're winning, and we had bigger crowds as well, the new stand
really?
Developed, so we had bigger crowds. And when you're winning, and Dino was very forthright in, look, Quinn's have got a reputation about being a sort of quite obnoxious city boys, and it's a little bit below us to go to Birmingham Solihull and whatnot. And he said, well, we're not having that. We're having a beer with our opposite man or five before we get on the bus and then stop at another boozer. And Dino knows his boozers along every single motorway in England, let me tell you that.
Never try to keep
and
up with
Dino. It was a brilliant year. We went up, we won the cup at that level, and obviously, walked the league. And you also have an opportunity to blood a lot of youngsters, which I think Saracens have got an opportunity to do as well. So they'll blood like youngsters in the Premiership this year, expose them to it, because obviously they're down.
And probably,
and they'll give the opportunity next year, and the Stars will get a bit of a rest. So in many ways, it could work in favour. What I'm interested in, though, is they've got to be compliant with the salary cap. Haven't they? So for one season, I mean, they say two, but I think for one season, while they're going up, there is no salary cap in the Championship, but they have to be seen to be compliant.
So rumour has it, that what Bristol did is that they basically paid their players a shed load of money when they were in the Championship, and then less salary in the Premiership. I don't know whether that's true, allegedly.
Front loading.
So Saracens won't be able to do that, I guess.
Look, I don't know the ins and outs of it, but let's hypothetically say, because we're here to discuss it, Owen Farrell's one of their marquee players, okay? Yeah. Let's say Billy Vunipola's the other one. If they're complying with the salary cap laws in the Championship, where there is no cap, but they're complying with the laws are, in the Premiership, you'll have two marquee players. So what's stopping Billy getting all his brother's salary in there for the next 4 years, right? And his, and that Fazzi's for the next 4 years, right? And then they come back into the Premiership and they're paid about 50 grand and then you go and sign in some more. Now, look, I'm sure after all this absolute debacle...
They won't let them do it.
You're going to get proper governance, independent governance. Premier Rugby are under pressure as well for the way they've handled it. And stuff like that will not be allowed to do. And if you do go anywhere near it, you're going to get kicked out. And I hope that's the way they go about it, because it really has dragged rugby. You know, it's been the biggest scandal. You know, we were part of a little thing called Bloodgate, which you brought up, but ultimately that was only six games, roughly, wasn't it? Not five seasons. So five times 30 was 150 games versus six or something like that.
Cool. Well, let's now just focus our attention on the Six Nations, which is just around the corner, shall we?
Rocket Six Nations Special.
Kieran, I'd be interested, you know, you won a World Cup. I got to a final, lost actually similarly to South Africa. But from your experience when you came back into the Six Nations, how did you approach it? You're world champions. Yeah. Eddie Jones has come out and said he wants to be known, you know, he wants England to be playing the best rugby that's ever been played and the greatest team that's ever been there. Yeah. Set that as a sort of overarching target and a vision. What was he like in 2004 with you?
Well, I'm glad you said that, because you probably haven't done your research. What happened is
I didn't get selected.
I retired. So what happened? No, but let me explain. This is quite funny. So basically, I came back and I thought about it, and I couldn't touch my toes. My back was all over the place. I needed another operation. So I thought, do you know what? Now's the time to retire. So I phoned up Clive. I said, Clive, listen, I'm not going to be available for the Six Nations. I'm going to retire. And he said, good decision. Okay, so, but I don't want you to announce it until Monday. And I said, why is that? And he goes, because I want to announce the squad and I don't want any side distractions. And I said, okay, fine. So on Monday, he basically announced the squad with me not in it. And he said, I'm dropping Kieran Bracken from the squad. So if I'd have known, I'd have just announced it and retired. I had that humility of sort of not getting on in the final and then getting dropped. But what I will say about you and I were commentating on the final, and you called it before the final, didn't you? You said England are going to get smashed, which I thought the opposite, but you showed me some videos of the interviews before that their mind wasn't right, and I think you called it very well.
I think it was more to do with, you know, having coached out there, a big part of the squad I'd coached and been in touch with a few England boys as well, and was never crossing over any information or they'd give me any, but I just sensed the mindset from South Africa, being the underdogs. You know, they spoke about greater purpose or higher purpose. You know, you don't know actually how that can affect each individual player, but they hadn't, for me, South Africa hadn't peaked.
No.
They hadn't peaked to the World Cup. England had. And they were brilliant, you know, throughout the World Cup, and they were building nicely. Australia, they took them apart. New Zealand, we all know how good that performance was.
Yeah,
and that was my fear. And England play a very sort of physical bully boy game.
Yeah,
and actually, if there's a side that can stand up to that and get the best of you in that, it's South Africa. Yeah. And that was my fear for England.
But Clive Woodward called it on the Monday. He said he was phoned up the week before about being on TV. For the parade of winning the World Cup and where they go to the Palace. And, you know, we had the parade and it gets commentated on. And they asked him to comment. And he said, but they've not won it yet. And he said, well, no, they're going to win it. But like me and a lot of the sport, you know, rugby lads, I thought, well, you play that well against New Zealand, you know, you're going to smash South Africa, who just about got over the line against Wales. And you just think, well, on paper, we're going to smash them. But somewhere along the line for the players, I kind of feel that they lost their way. They thought they'd almost won it. If your brother's flying out to watch you pick up the World Cup, if everyone's talking about parades, somewhere along the line, I know Eddie Jones would have said, right, start again, but some of the interviews, compare the interviews, the fear factor from South Africa, they knew if they had to be at their best. But tactically, I think South Africa got it massively right in the front row and the amount of props they took and the rotation throughout the World Cup, whereas we kept the same players on and then brought people on for the last 20, and it just didn't work. And also, you know, the selection at number 9 I thought was really bizarre. So there were a few things that I wasn't happy about in that World Cup. But back to your point coming back, I think Eddie knows that he's got to now raise the bar. So it's quite weird. I think he's been coached by this Pembroke guy over in Australia, and basically he's the new tag of the greatest ever team the world has ever seen. I'm like, right, okay, brilliant. And then he said, I'm going to change this team around, I'm going to make changes, it's going to be a new face. And I'm thinking, bollocks, you have not changed anything. You've not brought in Don Brandt, okay, who's been fantastic for Harlequins. You've brought in 6 or 7 players, some apprentices, but look at the team and where are the changes, okay? Not at 9, which needed to be done, okay? Back row, instead of bringing up someone like Earl, they're probably going to have Tom Curry starting, okay? The pack's almost exactly the same. The backs are almost exactly the same. You know, the midfield's the same. Where are the changes? Where's this new team?
I don't think there should be changes, Brex. I think the age profile, the youngest average age of any side that's got to a final.
But he shouldn't say there's a new face, there's a new team.
He likes a bit of rhetoric, doesn't he, in bombast and everything. Yeah. Yeah. You know that, and you sort of pick up on half of it, and the other half you just chuck in the bin. You know what he's about. But he's a smart guy.
You're a coach, just out of interest, and you're closer to the likes of Gus and Paul Gustard from Harlequins and other players who've left the camp, and Borthwick is leaving to go to Leicester at the end of Six Nations. But he keeps changing around his coaching team, and some say that would be a good thing to keep everyone sharp. But you know, what do you think of the new coach? Is Simon Amar Sevens coach got involved now, and is it Proudfoot for the South African for the forwards? So making changes. So is that a right thing to do? Change it up? Are they the right people? What do you think?
You can look at it both ways, can't you? Continuity is great. We've seen that with New Zealand, but sometimes, you know, especially if you're going to keep a lot of the players. So the players aren't changing much, the core group of players. Let's be honest, they're going to be around for the next 4 years at the peak of their powers, hopefully. Just new thoughts, new voice. Look, rugby's rugby. Is there a new way of doing things? Look, you're always looking for that sort of magic bullet or the next invention and everything. And what's interesting is the dynamic of the England coaching staff that's changed. So when Eddie came in 4 years ago, Borthwick, Gustard, Neil Hatley might have joined a little bit later, but they were all, you know, excellent coaches in their own right, but, you know, relatively inexperienced and youthful coaches. Yeah. And Eddie was sort of the, you know, the big boss, the guy that had been around the block a long time, various countries, various, you know, clubs and nations. Whereas now he's got John Mitchell and Matt Proudfoot there. You know, guys that, you know, have been in the international arena, in the club arena for a long, long time, and are probably less likely to, you know, take orders or whatever it might be, but actually be more involved and be treated, you know, and Eddie will like them being on the same level in terms of treating them equally, empowering them. But at the same time, we know Eddie, you know, he drives a hard bargain as far as how hard you work. You know, he leaves no stone unturned, and it's got England, you know, a lot of success. He's got a great win record. And, you know, these guys, along with Eddie, that's what will be expected. You're at the pinnacle of the game. You're highly rewarded when you get there. Matt Proudfoot taking on scrum and line out. He's done it with South Africa. You know, that's a big responsibility. And I think clearly what happened in the World Cup final, that's a great coup for him to get him across. You know, a guy that's been involved with a nation that plays similarly, that has a similar sort of athletes. John Mitchell, I thought our defence was absolutely excellent, fantastic, yeah, wasn't it, last year? You know, he brought a new level to our defence, the aggressiveness, the brutality, and the line speed and everything. And
I got a feeling though Simon Amor might be very good, but I kind of feel that it's almost already run by Farrell and Ford anyway. It'd be hard for him to become sort of
that's what you want, Brett.
Yeah, no, I agree.
You want your players driving it, you lead and facilitate. And you certainly come up with ideas and you know, do the work behind the scenes, but ultimately they're the guys that have got to have clarity in what they're doing and have got to buy into what's happening. And if they see this is how we should do it, and as long as you lay your cards on the table, then you've got to get behind them.
Can we talk about the team then and team selection and who we think are going to be? Interesting one's going to be the selection. Now, obviously, by the time this goes out, selection will have been made. But your front row, would you have Marler starting? Because it's interesting... You know, the coach, Eddie Jones, turned around and said that if he had his time again, he'd have dropped Ford and brought and basically changed it up with Slade and Farrell. And then in the front row, he'd have had Macko on the bench. So it'd be interesting who he chooses there in the front row.
Yeah, I mean, my selection would be Marler.
Really?
Okay. Look, Eddie's been burnt by the scrum. He won't want that happening again.
I think Macko's slightly injured as well.
Injured. Macko, look, I don't think this whole Saracens saga will affect the Saracens players in there, but if there's any thought in the selectors' minds that it might, you know, that removes him.
It's like Brexit. I don't want to go back to it, but apparently they had a clear the air talk, didn't they, right in camp about this, you know, the relegation salary and cap and all of that. And but it just dawned on me, there's hardly anyone in there from Exeter. Because if anyone's got a problem with it, it'll be Exeter players. I can't imagine Slade or Cowan Dickey saying, well, it's not fair.
If there's no one's going to say there's a problem. If you're
you've
got an opportunity to win a Grand Slam. Yeah, you're not going to say anything that's going to jeopardise that. You're like, well, hold on a second.
Yeah.
You know, we've got the opportunity to be immortal here, to win a Grand Slam, obviously get rewarded for it as well financially. They're just going to say, look, we'll take the piss out of you.
Yeah,
you know, that was already said. Look, you've just given us extra ammo to absolutely rip into you.
Yeah. As a player, it would be. If I was an Exeter player, I'd be gutted.
Of course you would, mate. And you know that's where most of it goes. You get it's like the cheats in the Olympics, isn't it? You know, all the drug takers.
Yeah.
You know, this is the pinnacle. You've dedicated. You've committed all your time.
Would you say to give back the cups, the titles? What's your
100%.
Oh, really?
100%.
Oh, right.
Of course they are. They shouldn't keep them.
Okay.
They should be stripped.
Wow.
Okay. But look, as I was saying, we'll get back to it. I was going to go Marler, George Sinclair, Cruz Itoje, Laws Curry, Underhill.
Yeah.
Ben Earl's been pulling up trees. Probably not the game to give him his debut.
No.
Curry and Underhill, superb in the World Cup. You've got three back row players there who are going to absolutely terrorise the halfbacks. So France come in youthful, exuberance. They're going to try and bring back the flair. They've not got any guys scarred from the last decade when they were diabolical and losing heavily, especially to England last year, especially. Guys that won under-20s World Cups. Well, if you've got that confidence, but actually this is top-level international rugby, and they're going to go at them hard in the pack. And
that's a settled pack, isn't it?
The front foot,
that
back row is the best back row for taking time and space away from halfbacks, and that's how I see the game going for England.
And so I notice you've not mentioned the backs because you don't have that much sort of expertise in the backs. So, but Ben Young's starting. I'm surprised after the World Cup that they haven't brought in new blood.
Who would you pick?
Well, I think Dan Robson's a cracking player, I'll be honest with you. I think he gets the ball away quickly. That's the most important thing, I think, getting the ball away quickly. I think Ben Youngs takes too many steps, but Will Hines actually is pretty good. I like the way he gets the ball away. Ben Spencer, but he doesn't say much on the pitch. So, he's gone with those two. I think he should have brought some of the others out to sort of get a bit of experience, but he hasn't. So he's gone with that. My view that they should make a change, but moving on, fly half, I do think they're going to do the Farrell-Ford combination, Tulangi. What it'd be interesting with fullback, because I don't think Daly, I always feel Daly's like a really good outside centre, but never gets the chance. And they put him at fullback, and he's never that secure under the high ball. So they might put Watson and Daly, they might swap them over, I don't know, and then on the other wing may. But it's a very, like you say, very settled team. And Eddie Jones has said he wants to be completely brutal against the French. And listen, over the years, the French were brutal. Their pack were just enormous. But it could be a game that comes too early for France because they've got so many of these young players, won World Cups with the 20s. Suddenly they're going to go into that arena against a World Cup final team. And Eddie Jones has said, we're going to be brutal. And I think he might be right. I think if we were playing France in the last game of the Six Nations, it would suit them just to feel their way into the tournament. But it doesn't suit them to have the first game against the World Cup winning team. What do you think?
Yeah, agreed. And I think at top level rugby, more than anything else, the ability, the strategy and how you manage territory and your kicking game is absolutely critical in terms of where the pressure lies. And England were the best in the World Cup for that. They were the best. They didn't give many opportunities to most of the sides they played against. And that's exactly what you expect this weekend. And, you know, they're hoping the French might hang themselves again, playing with confidence, no fear. You know, there might be an intercept pass. They might play a little bit too much rugby. And I think that's the way they're going to go about it. I think the French will be dangerous. You know, Fakatawa, you know, the centre at Racing.
Yeah.
He's been absolutely scintillating form. You've got Penno out there.
Amazing.
Some of the forwards they've got as well. Oh. They'll put passages of play together.
Do you know what?
And they'll cause us problems.
Do you know what I find weird? You know, man for man, okay, whenever I've seen England play against France, when I've played against them, I thought, crikey, what a team. Playing against Castagnard and Serge Betson, and on paper, amazing. But you always wonder how they get it so wrong. They don't travel very well over in France, you know, play away from home. You know, they generally lose and win all the home games. And they're just, they just seem a nation that don't seem to be able to organise themselves at all, which is amazing with the talent they have. And the question is now with their coaching team, which is very exciting. I played against Galtier, who's their head coach, but they've got Ibanez, who was a proper mongrel. I don't know whether you played against him, Rafael Ibanez, what a legend. But then you've got Sean Edwards from Wigan, who's gone up there, and he's can you imagine? He can just about speak English. How's he going to learn French? Can you imagine?
He's the Lancastrian Del Boy, isn't he?
Can you imagine his teammate? Can you imagine his team meetings? It's going to be brilliant, isn't it? But
they love him, mate, by all accounts over there. I heard reports recently, and look, every team has been coached under him, that's the interesting subplot for me, is how the French adapt their mentality and attitude, because defence is all about attitude.
Yeah.
And he'll be giving them confidence in terms of the English psyche, having beaten England plenty of times with Wales, and defensively instilling a discipline. Yeah.
What is it about them? Because you know what I find strange when I looked at the sort of spend in France, and I think Toulouse and Stade Français, they spend 35 million compared to Saracens 14 million. That was a joke, by the way. And I was just wondering, how is it that we can compete when they're three times, four times, you know, the output of, you know, sort of English and Welsh and Irish teams? I just find it amazing. And it's all to do, for me, about organisation.
Well, they haven't come into professionalism, that's the thing. No. What he's done here as part of his squad, Galtier, is he's gone, any of the past generation that had that laissez-faire, turn up when you fancy attitude, we don't want you here. You know, we don't want those scars here at all. So he's brought young guys in.
18 guys.
This is the thing, Brax. They brought young guys in who have won under-20 World Cups.
Yeah.
They're the driving force at their teams. He's gone for the successful, most professional sides as well. Toulouse, Racine, Clermont, players from there. And he realises we're so behind the eight ball, we've got to catch up.
Yeah.
And I think it was quite an easy selection for him. I don't think he's under much pressure.
No.
And that's what makes him so dangerous, isn't it? Especially when they got
first
the intel
game,
of
though. If you're a betting man, first game, you know, I think it would have been much harder to face him at the end. Did you play against Rafael Ibanez, the team manager?
Plenty of times. Oh, I mean, he retired. I think his last game was against us in the semi in 2007, actually.
He's
got 98 caps, didn't he?
I think he
was on 98 caps, and that was his 98th, the semi-final.
I'll tell you a story.
They wanted him to play the following year. He's like, no, I'm retiring.
I'll tell you a story about him. I'm captain of Saracens, and he's joined us, and he's fantastic. Captain of France and everything. But he had a run of form, wasn't playing very well. And he got dropped, and a young guy called Matt Kearns came in.
Oh, yeah, Kearns. So Matt
Kearns came in and played one game, played quite well, and then was picked for the next game. So Ibanez has got a real face on him, right, a real sulky face on him. And he comes to me and he goes, Kieran, on Saturday I'm playing, I'm starting. I said, no, you're on the bench. He said, no, wait, I am starting. I said, no, but you've been picked on the bench. And he said, we will see tomorrow. So tomorrow the session comes, training session, right, he comes in with a boot, boots, it's not that funny really at the time. It's funny now looking back, but he boots him in the head and 10 stitches across his head, picks the ball up and then throws in the next line out, and he's taken off a concussion. He's out for 4 weeks. He did play that weekend, and Matt came to me and said, what are you going to do about it? And I said, well, mate, there's not much I can do about it. He's just taking you out. I mean, it was one of those. Francois Pinault was the coach, and we were like, how do we deal with this? And then we were like, well, he's injured now, so he can't play. So even as starts. But that was his mentality. And he on the pitch, he was like, you know, all guns blazing, and he was great to play with. But yeah, that was one of the moments in my captaincy where I'm not sure I got right, but I sort of had to let it go. I don't know what Matt came to your place. And
he came to our place, mate. His nickname was the Bollock, because of the size of his head.
Yeah,
so it was an easy target for Raf. In all fairness, what we need, bottom line, is a strong France team. The global game of rugby is stronger for a good France team. It was like South Africa. Mm. 2-3 years ago, absolutely abhorrent in 16 to 17. Rassie came in, changed it all around, and the global game is much better for these superpowers or traditional superpowers of France and South Africa being better. And, you know, there's a lot of Englishmen that don't like the French. I've got a lot of time for them. And, you know, I hope that they, you know, they continue. Well, I said they start a rise towards becoming, you know, our big rivals in the Six Nations. When I played for England, it was a big one. In the last sort of 8-9 years, it hasn't been the case.
I hate you going there, though. Did you
I loved it.
Did you like, mate, it? Well, the food is horrible, mate. Oh,
are you joking? Sandwich. You have a 7-course meal, oysters, caviar, the red wine's on the table. You've got multiple choices of cheese.
No, the amount of cheese and... Oh. Le Pan,
you were shortchanged, mate. You were probably on the physio bed, so missed out on all the courses because you always got treatment after a game, despite making only about 2 tackles and never hitting the ruck.
Do you know one player?
Stitching in your hair, weren't they?
One French player I hated playing against, Serge Betson. Honestly, he ruined my career on about 3 occasions. I got dropped every time I played against him, and he absolutely cleared us out. And I believe we're going to get him on the phone and have a chat about the match.
Yeah, Kieran, how are you doing?
Happy New Year. Very good. Thank you for coming on for our first show and having a chat about the rugby. Nick's on the line as well. Thank you very much. If we were ever going to speak to a French legend of the game, it would have to. Our number one would be you, and it's amazing we've got you on the line, which is brilliant. But we're talking about the Six Nations, and before we do that, about this weekend's match, Le Crunch, France against England. Just want to reminisce about 2002. Do you remember you did a number on Johnny Wilkinson, stopped him playing, you kicked the living shit out of me, and I got dropped after that. So I lost my place in the England team and the World Cup team because of you, Serge Betson.
Oh my goodness.
Do you remember?
I'm so sorry to hear that. I didn't have that knock-on effect on your career.
You did.
But yeah,
you enjoyed that day. What was your plan? What was your plan? Just Johnny and me, just do us over. It was, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't that easy, Kieran. You know, French team are always challenging to be at their best against England. And I think, there's a lot of rivalry. And also, the year before, I think England smashed France.
Yeah,
at Twickenham, very, very heavily, and I think most of the players were there at the game. I wasn't there. I was dropped because of my yellow card on the 2000 opening Six Nations, and I have to work out. And I have to say, I made a point of being at my best against us, which is you and Johnny.
But some of those tackles, I'm not being funny. Okay, there's late. And there's really late, all right? I mean, some of them were so late. It was like the next day.
At that time, they didn't have any VAR. Then, you know, the referee wasn't aware of the level of the tackle. But I'm so sorry. I didn't hurt you.
No, you did. But yeah, listen, it took me years to get my confidence back, or a year. But interestingly, I've just been shown a picture because you played against Nick Easter as well. And he's going to tweet this as well because this is a brilliant. Have you seen this picture?
Hello, Serge. How are you, mate?
Hi, good, you?
Yeah, good. We played against each other many times at Wasps. And 07 World Cup. Listen, can you just explain to any listeners out there why you unfollowed me from Instagram this time last year when Le Crunch was on? Do you remember this or not?
No, no. What happened?
I tweeted a photo of just us on the battlefield in the World Cup semi-final, and it's a hardcore photo. Let's put it that way. Nothing deliberate in it, and Instagrammed your name in there as well, and then you were following me, and you suddenly unfollowed me about it. But I'll tell you what, Serge, I'm going to get it out again. Look,
send it to me. Let's have a look. Send it to me.
I'm gonna send it out again, just for you.
Which photo?
It's just you clearing me out of a ruck. I'd say a little illegally. Okay. I won't say how, but you're clearing me from a ruck.
Finger in the eye. Back of your skull.
But it was always great playing the French. And look, just talk us a little briefly into sort of the mindset of the French, how they're going into this game. Because for me, playing, and Brax has spoken about it on the pod as well earlier, is this was the big game. The Six Nations, anyway, it was called Le Crunch for a reason. This was the big challenge. You always had a monster forward pack. You had unbelievably talented players. And when you turned it on, you were the best team in the world. And for us, when we were with England, this is always the game we look forward to, the one where the nerves were fraught the most and the pressure was biggest. And in the last decade, it hasn't quite seemed like that. But, you know, Fabian's picked a very youthful side. He's not gone with any players that have been scarred from the previous heavy losses. And just give us an insight. I don't know how close you are to the coaching setup or any of the players, about how the French are approaching this game psychologically.
I think the French team are very, very good. Just to give you a little bit of an update, Fabien Galtier was part of the staff during the World Cup in Japan. That's why, surprisingly, French team turned up with a lot of great setup, with good organization on the game plan. And that, for me, is part of Fabien Galtier mindset and organization. And I think that now he make a decision to put a youngster to develop them and through the game time and get them to be fit for what we call the World Cup in 2023. Then saying that, I think they also had a great, great, great staff member who come in, and Sean Edwards, who are one of the greatest defense coach ever. And I think with that adding into the staff, French team will be really, really good in terms of the organization. And also, we lost against Wales in the quarterfinal of the World Cup. And you choose to see that growing talent like Emil Tamaxon or other players who are very, very strong and skillful. I think French team are really, really now ready for the next chapter, which is Galtier and all the staff around to deliver, I think, the best of what French can deliver for the Six Nations.
Well, Serge, but thanks for your time today. You do owe me about 20 England caps because it took me a long time to recover. Thank you for your time in the game. Myself and Nick Easter enjoyed playing against you. And finally, a prediction for this weekend. What's the score going to be, my friend? In English, not French.
I think the score will be very, very close, as usual. You know that the game is so tight, the intensity. I think 21-19 will be my prediction for France, obviously. 21-19, ça va être le score. Donc, attendez-vous à ce que ça soit très, très dur.
I understood everything. Yes. Cheers, my friend.
Bye-bye.
Rocket with Kieran Bracken and Nick Easter.
We're talking all things Six Nations. Big game this weekend. Great start for two coaches, Andy Farrell, Ireland against Scotland. So what's your thoughts on this game? This is probably the most exciting one, surely.
No, mate, no.
Oh, you think the crunch.
I'll tell you what's let us nail in this game. Because this is usually, actually, and I know what you're getting at, quite a good game of rugby.
Yeah.
But the Finn Russell incident.
Oh.
Oh, you can know, I, can drinking I just, to drinking no, till late hours, so 2-point funny. Rule.
Can I?
And, can I know, just buggers off, goes to his club, plays for his club, and
my favourite,
without their best player.
You're like, my favourite WhatsApp came to me. Sources close to the matter reveal that Finn Russell was disciplined for multiple offences in breach of Scotland team protocol. Number one, breaking the gain line. Number two, running at pace. Number three, making first up tackles. And number four, bringing a winning mentality. I love that. Which, but he's clashed, hasn't he, with Gregor Townsend, the coach in Japan, about the way they're playing.
I think it was last year's Six last Nations, year's, wasn't it? They were 31-0 down or 31-7 down.
What happened
half
then?
Time to England. And I think by all accounts, or his account, Gregor was saying, and the game plan was to kick it. You know, don't play any rugby in your own half. And Finn Russell went, well, that's what you've just told us to do. And we're 31-7 or 31-0 down. He said, we're not kicking it, we're running it. And he was single-handedly the catalyst, isn't he, for that comeback. And luckily, we didn't give him too much glory. Otherwise, you'd never heard the end of it. But I think there's also some undertones in terms of his dad, who was dismissed last summer. Yeah. He worked for the Scottish Rugby Union, and he's just won his unfair dismissal case.
Right.
So there's a bit of that going on as well. And look, this could play out for quite a bit. And the irony of the whole thing, though, and you would know this more having played against him, is they're similar type of players. Gregor, I remember watching Gregor and going, you know, when he played he was the 97 Lions 10, you know, he was one of the few Scotsmen in there.
Yeah.
He was a maverick. He had the skills. He was ahead of his time. He was one that challenged coaches.
Yeah.
Look, we don't know the ins and outs, but we're here to discuss it. That's a real blow for Scotland.
Massive. Massive. I mean, Adam Hastings, it seems a common thing with all these kids of dads who are playing, you know, playing for their country. But Adam Hastings is not a bad player, but he's not, you know, they don't quite have the spark, do they? And their pack isn't as fierce as it used to be. And the question is, you know, where can they win the game?
Look, I think what's fascinating actually throughout the Six Nations actually is how Ireland progress. Talk about World Cup, their attack was pilloried really as part of the game. They didn't move on, and actually it's always been very risk-averse.
Boring, wasn't it? It was so boring.
But it's always been risk-averse under Joe Schmidt, sort of two or three phase plays, that's it. Otherwise, we don't offload, we don't keep the ball alive, we don't play anywhere near our own half. And now Andy Farrell's got his first shot at being a selector and being a number one. Fantastic personality guy, motivator. He's got his first shot, but he's a defence coach. So he's got to sort of give up the reins a little bit, knowing that the reports come through and he was a part of it where, look, we've got to be better with ball in hand. And he's brought in Mike Catt for his new ideas, and he's worked with him with England before. And it'd be interesting how they approach the Six Nations, and especially this game, because I think they'll just want to get a win under their belt and they'll play the Leinster direct power game that beat Scotland comfortably in the first game of the World Cup, because Scotland will thrive on unstructured. And I think we'll see a little bit of the Irish, you know.
Well, if you notice, he's dropped a couple of big players like Robbie Henshaw, Peter O'Mahony, which I thought was quite a big call. And he's obviously gone for a bit of pace at the back in Jordan Lamour and Doris at number eight, making his first start. But
a big disappointment, though, in your position. John Cooney.
Yeah, John Cooney for us. Amazing. And then, Connor Murray has had a very average World Cup. But actually, I think he wants the continuity playing with Sexton. And I'm sure Cooney will get his chance. But what I really liked about Andy Farrell was he announced his team yesterday.
Yeah.
Okay. And said, listen, what's the point? Joe Smith wanted to do it at the last minute and wanted training. No one could cover the training. And it was all secretive. And it was all about detail. And Rory Best afterwards just said it was just paralysis by analysis. And I think what Andy Farrell did there was brilliant. He just said, there's my team, all right, pick who you want, I don't care, we're going to focus on ourselves. But I'm going to ask you just about when assistants become head coaches, and I'm going to give you some names, and where I don't think it necessarily always works. I think you're right. Andy Farrell was a fantastic player in rugby league, not quite the player in rugby union. He goes into coaching, does very well with England, British Lions, and with Ireland, and I've seen this before. So Brian Ashton was coaching, Bats coach, and suddenly elevated to senior coach, and he coached you. And I never thought he was a head coach. I thought he was a brilliant, you know, thinker outside the box and, you know, no structure. And then there's Andy Robinson as well. Great forwards coach, 03, then went on and struggled. And John Mitchell as well. So sometimes, I know there's a name for it. I don't know the actual name for it, where someone gets elevated above what they're proper. We'll find that out. Somebody will tell me. But in business,
promotion?
That happens. No. There's a name for it. The Swedish. But there's some name for it where.
But then you look at the converse side of it.
Yeah.
And Steve Hansen worked under Graham Henry.
Yeah.
And then very, very successful.
That's true.
For 2 years. And I suppose what you've got to get right is the personality of the person to be a head coach. And I think we're a lot further down the line now in terms of understanding that than, you know, 10, 12 years ago. And it's a very different role. You're less hands-on. Yeah. You're less hands-on. There's, you know, in, on the international stage, look at the international stage. I think Eddie Jones came out and Stuart Lancaster came out as well, and he said, it's about 70% media. It's about 20% corporate and dealing with the, you know, the unions, and it's about 10% coaching. And clearly with it, 70% media and selection.
Yeah.
And he said there's about 10% coaching.
Here's the question, though. So I think Andy Farrell, you know, I played with him, great lad. And another story we should talk about. We should talk about what it's like in the Farrell household at the moment. But you know, like Arteta came from City in football and is coaching Arsenal. You do question, do they have the ability to change the course of events by bringing people on, by their selections, by their changes that they make during a match? Does Andy Farrell have that experience, and will he be able to do it? And I'd be disappointed personally if Ireland do play a very average, boring game just to win games. I think they need to go back to what they're good at. Because do you know why Ireland's so good with the ball in hand? It's because they play all these other sports, Gaelic football. My brother lives out there and all the kids out there that they play Gaelic football, they play hurling and they play rugby, okay? And they're very athletic and very skillful. And I think they should stick to that instead of just pounding out wins. I think they should try and move the ball, get some pace into their game. And it'd be interesting to see whether Andy Farrell will bring that to them.
Think it's a bit of a... I have no idea of being inside there, but I'd imagine it's a very much more of a long-term plan with him, because ultimately it's the World Cup where they've fallen down and they've got past the quarter. So if they
Four-year cycle, shocking.
Listen, we need to... Semi-final is what Andy Farrell needs to do, really, in 4 years' time. Mm-hmm. So he does have a bit of rope there. But this is his first game. He's at home. They've got tough fixtures this year. They're away in Paris, away in London. He'll want to get him in there.
Conor Murray,
you've only got sort of 2 weeks with the team. Attack's always the last thing that actually, you never really perfect it, but the last thing to really come together is, there'll be snippets of it, but I'd expect to see a very territory-orientated power game from Ireland just to beat Scotland, and then they'll evolve their attack as the comp goes on.
Yeah, I hope so. I don't think the likes of Sexton and Murray will be there in 4 years' time, will they? But this is a must-win game for him. But what's it like? Can you imagine in the household when Ireland go to face England? I mean, who's the mum going to support? I mean, that's a bit weird.
Asked that before. I can't remember the answer. It's happened a few times now, though.
Do you know what I said to, I mean, you know, Owens, he doesn't take too much to banter, does he? Because I asked him when he was playing for England, and his dad was defence coach, and I said, well, you know, when they're talking to selection, I said, you know, when you go into the bathroom, you knock on the door to dad and you say, listen, dad, am I playing? Am I not playing? You know, I was winding him up and having a bit of crack with it. And he said, no, don't say anything. Don't talk about it. And I was like, really? Come on. And you're going to like training. And look, dad, am I in? Am I not in? But he's always in anyway. It's quite easy for him, isn't it? But the mum. The poor mum who's got, you know.
I think the mum supports the son. Mum's English. She'd support the son.
You think so?
Or maybe it's tit for tat. Maybe it's, okay, when you're at home, I'll support you. So when I'm at home, I'll support Ireland. When England are at home, I'll support England.
Can't do that. They're a lovely family.
Even it up over the course of the year.
They've got another little one. I think they've got a 2 or 3-year-old, which is great. But he's living in Ireland. When I saw Andy about a year ago, he's living in Ireland, he put about 2 stone. And I said, mate, you put a bit of weight on. He went, I'm not being funny, but Guinness, it treats me quite well. And I was like, brilliant. But I wish him all the best. I hope he does well. So
I think he'll do well, mate.
Yeah,
I think he'll
good.
Do well.
Rocket, Kieran Bracken, Nick Easter, the brand new rugby podcast.
So Wales, Italy, a nice gentle start for Wayne Pivock and his coaching team.
Yeah.
Italy, you know, wouldn't, majority of the time, wooden spoonists. Do you see anything different this year? I know Franco Smith's been brought in there, and having coached against him actually last year, he's a very attack-minded coach, but on the hard grounds of Bloemfontein with top-quality players and athletes, you know, in comparison to the sides you're playing against, it's a little bit easier, and
he doesn't
quite have that luxury. And international rugby does require you to be a little bit more territory-driven.
Yeah, I mean, I've always felt with Italy that their problem is their halfbacks. They never have a settled halfbacks. They've got some of the greatest players I've ever seen, like Sergio Parisi, who's just incredible player.
But would you just get into that? What do you think about him bringing him back for a swan song?
I think it's good.
I don't know. I disagree with it.
Oh, really?
I don't think... This is professional sport. I don't think there's room for sentiment in professional sport.
Well, they gave you an extra year at Harlequins when you didn't deserve one.
Yeah, I didn't take it, actually.
Oh, you
didn't take it?
I got off by Saracens to come back, by the way.
When your time's up, your time's up, and you move on.
But what does it say?
What if you're a young bat rower coming through and you deserve to be there on form? Because in all fairness to Sergio, yes, one of the best opponents I've ever played against. Fantastic.
He still is good, mate. He still is good.
Now, the last three years, mate, he has not been at the same level. And you've got these young bat rowers, Negri, Zanni, Cici, Pellegri. And for a home game in Rome, you're saying, well, we're bringing this guy back in because he was such an icon of the game. You know, it's not Hollywood, this. You need to move forward. And I think for Italy to move forward, he's been an absolute legend for him and stalwart. But I just think, I personally don't think it's the right way.
I'm not even sure Italy really should be in the championship anymore. I think it's getting boring. I mean, the question is whether there should be promotion or relegation, which I think there would be, which, you know, in some years, maybe Scotland would go down or Wales would go down, and no one's going to vote for that, are they? But Wales, it's interesting that Wales, though, you know, after the success that they've had 12 years with Warren, it's interesting, and I won't claim this quote, but it's Warren Vaughan against Wayne's World, which is quite interesting. I think that was Stephen Jones. But I'm excited to see how the Wales approach this. I mean, you know more about Pivac, but he's sort of gone through the same sort of background as some of the greatest coaches. He used to be a policeman, and he seems to be saying all the right things, and I think that's a good game for him to start. But the question is I believe he wants to change the attitude of the Welsh. He wants to get the ball moving, he wants to be exciting, almost play like carbon copy with the Scarlets that he coached. And then, you know, the question is, will it work in international rugby? Well, obviously against Wales it'll work, but the question is, will it work against some of the big hitters like France and England?
I think it's the way rugby is. You've got to, always has been, isn't it? You've got to use the full width of the field. He'll bring that width to the game. I think it will work, but he needs the players to be able to get the ball wide effectively, and the distributors. And the news coming out of the camp, don't know yet with selection, is that George North will play at 13. And when you've got Reece Zammit and Josh Adams, who are absolutely, you know, Josh Adams scored the most tries of the World Cup. Reece Zammit is on absolute fire. Will they see much of the ball with George North there at 13? I think Wales are in a good position. I don't think they've got the same expectation people think. Yes, he's got big shoes to fill. We know that with Gatland, but they've got a core group of players like England. They've got Faletau, Tipperick, Alan Wynne-Jones, Biggers there. Reece Webb's come back from Toulon. Those players have been around a successful group. So that psychological edge that Gatland always has, that defensive metal that they always had under him and Sean Edwards, will still be there, and he'll just want to build on that. And their biggest weakness has always been scoring tries, and I think they've got great coaches in Wayne Pivock and Stephen Jones to be able to do it. It's just they've got to find the distribution in the midfield to maximise that game plan.
Yeah, Jonathan Davies, big loss, but I mean, they need, personally, I think they, you know, I think they lack depth, don't they? When the bench come on, you're like, well, you know, what, 2-3 caps? They don't really
lack depth in the back row.
Oh, no, not in the back row.
I mean, who are you selecting? You've got Tipperick, Faletau, Navidi, Moriarty, Wainwright, who was probably the standout back rower for them.
Should we make some predictions? And can we put a sub-note on this, that do not go by our predictions? The last tip I gave someone was 99 World Cup. England against Tonga, I said it'd be close, and someone put a grand on a point, and basically he lost about 40 grand the reason why the tip was because Tonga did well against, I think it was New Zealand. I said, oh, it'd be quite close, and then he lost about 40 grand, and I'm the worst predictor, and I'm hoping you're better. So should we do some predictions?
Yep, fire away.
Rocket. This week's predictions.
Predictions then for the Six Nations this weekend. So England-France, I've got England winning by 3 points. Ireland against Scotland, I've got Ireland winning by 15 points. And Wales v Italy, Wales winning by 45 points. What say you?
Wales, Italy, 28 points to Wales. Ireland, Scotland, I think 12. And England, France, England by 6.
Nice. So we're agreed on that. What about the tournament then? How's it going to pan out?
Well, the last four Six Nations after World Cup, there's been a Grand Slam winner.
Ah.
We did it in 16, Wales in 12 and 08, and France back in 04 when they were a powerhouse. I think it's England's tournament. I hope they get the Grand Slam. You know, if Eddie's coming out saying they want to be the greatest side that's ever played the game, well, they've got to win a Grand Slam to start off with.
Yeah.
And I think given the position they're in after the World Cup, the players they have, they've also got a very, very generous fixture list. And what I mean by that is their two toughest games away are first up. And then they've got a nice break before a home game against Ireland, nice break before a home game against Wales, so they can get great prep in for those two strong sides. And then hopefully it'll be a cakewalk in Rome.
Okay, so England win. Come on, the other ones. So England first. Who's your second?
England, France, Wales, ooh. Ireland, Scotland, Italy.
Oh, okay. I've got England, Ireland, France, Wales, Scotland, Italy. We shall see. A fiver.
Well, I'll do that, mate. I'll take that bet.
Okay.
Rocket with Kieran Bracken and Nick Easter, the brand new rugby podcast.
What were you like the night before Six Nations match?
I was fine, mate, before any international. Look, if your preparation's done, the pressure's off, isn't it? I remember, although I do remember, you know, 2011 World Cup when we played France and we had a good record against them, actually. We've just beaten them in the Six Nations recent record and we lost that game. And it was probably the worst half hour of rugby, opening half hour rugby we had played. I actually think I'd been involved with the England team and it was a bit shell-shocked. France had just lost to Tonga in the group stages. All that sort of stuff was happening. And I remember the night before, and it was the tour, if you remember, where, you know, it was known as Mike Tyndall's stag. You know, we were at that backpacking joint. We'd obviously done all the bungee jumping and everything. And
throwing dwarfs
and
stuff.
You know what it's like, mate. We're throwing dwarfs,
yeah.
You know.
As you do.
When they're vast,
as
you they're do. Very hard to get hold of those. And look, you've got to have a release. We were as professional as we can be. Look, we just got it wrong on the night, didn't we? But the media after you, you know, any little thing you can get, you know, it feeds them, doesn't it? And we knew that beforehand. We were warned beforehand. And it was sort of culminating and building up. And I remember Graham Rowntree, top guy Graham Rowntree, got the forwards in the night before. And he'd done the same, actually, for the quarterfinal against Australia. It's 4 years before, and we won that game. Unfortunately, it didn't quite have the same impact. But he spoke so well about the people writing us off and what we had in the room and how, you know, and how we could take this game on and, you know, really feel good and, you know, realise our potential, all that sort of stuff. But he got so fired up before a game that I think all the forwards probably had five portions of sticky toffee pudding. And I said to him afterwards, sort of tongue-in-cheek, when we lost, you know, a few days after, and I feel like that's it, you probably should have saved that speech for sort of about 5 minutes before kickoff week. And I think since then, the indulgent puddings have been banned throughout the week and even the night before, because they used to treat you the night before at Penny Hill Park when you went away. You used to get, right, the ice cream was out, the sticky toffee pudding or whatever. And I just remember we were so pumped up. We were looking, we wouldn't even talk. We'd get the food on the table and all we did was just pile our plate off.
Do you know my favourite story about Graham Rowntree, right? And I played with him for, you know, in the amateur days and the professional days with England. But 3 minutes into every match, when there was a break in play, he would get in a group, right, and we'd all be in a huddle chatting about what's happening next. And he would basically pull his shorts to the side, pull his cock out and piss in the middle of the pitch, wherever we were, and like, you know, in Paris, in the Millennium, everywhere. He did it every single time.
Hydrating, mate.
Every now and again, the boys would, as he's pissing, would just like move out so the cameras could get a good shot at it, which was a bit unruly. But my favourite.
And the next thing you know, mate, you've got your hooker and your tight head face planting in exactly the puddle.
Oh, nice. My favourite. This is a true story, and people have nicked this story, but this is a true story. So my second game was against Wales. Right, so first one, beat New Zealand, came in for Five Nations as it was then, and I'm rooming with Jason Leonard, right? So this is the amateur day. So this is a Wednesday night, and he's all dressed up. I said, where are you going? He says, I'm going out. And so are you. I said, but we play on Saturday against Wales. He goes, don't worry, they're shit. It's like a bye, right? So what do? I go out with him, and it's the worst thing you can do at, you know, at 21, 22, and he's sort of like, and he's 23 stone, and I'm 11 stone, 12 stone, and anyway, I'm drinking with him, pint shot, and I leave the nightclub, as you do, get back to the hotel, and the management are down in the pub on the ground floor. So this is true. I climb up the fire escape to the third floor, and as I'm getting in to the top floor, I can see Jack Rowell and Les Cusworth, the England coaches, on the bottom looking up. Who's that? Who's that? Anyway, emergency meeting in the morning. So Jack Rowell says, I'm disgusted. One of the players came in pissed. That's a disgrace. And I didn't see who it was. Will Carling, you're going to deal with it. So all the management go out, and I'm shitting myself, and I'm just about to stand up and open up. And Will Carling says, right, who was it? And Jason Leonard put his paws on my shoulders and stood up and said, listen, boys, it weren't me. Because I got in at 6:30. So that was it. It was very different in those days. It wasn't about, we weren't getting paid. It was just about having a crack and trying to stay out with Jason. So the message is, I mean, yeah, the message is, do not try and drink.
It wasn't the night before.
Do not try and drink with Jason Leonard. That's the upshot of it all. But it's a different times now. Protein shake meant something very different when I was playing rugby in the early days. But yeah, all very professional. Do you reckon they go out and get on it nowadays? Or
I think they leave it till the end of the tournament, don't they? Because you would know that when you made your debut, you had a drink with all the players,
The
ex-players around.
Oh, unless you're Finn Russell. When you get your first cap.
That was horrendous.
For those who don't know, I don't know whether they do it now, but it was basically custom that whoever gets the first cap, obviously drinks with his own teammates, but every player in the opposition brings a drink to the new cap, and they're expected to neck it. And you cannot refuse a drink from anyone until you're sick. So the amount of people not able to go up and get the first cap because they're sick. Steve Ajomo was like unconscious, getting sick. Matt Perry the same, getting sick. And it just, they don't do that now, do they?
No, they don't do it now, mate. And that's
wait for the last one, do they?
It's exactly that. We went to the Royal Lancaster Hotel after probably a lot of beers with friends and family in Twickenham after the game, then on the bus, then you sing your song. George Shooter's got triple whiskies lined up for me and all the Leicester lads. And then you're carrying on, and the guys are coming up with full glasses of red wine and snake bite and black. And I got my cap. I managed to withhold until I got my cap. Didn't know what was going on. And then it was time. And Vicks was captain, Phil Vickery, top guy, real people's person, guided me through the melee into the toilet and everything. As soon as we get there, couldn't hold it in. Projectile vomited all over some old Alakadu in there who's washing his hands in black tie as well back then. It was always black tie, wasn't it? All over him. I just bypassed him. I don't think I even apologised, actually. Just went into the toilet, finished what I had to do. Come out, Vicks and him are just obviously rubbing his suit off, and the bloke comes and shakes my hand and says, welcome to the club. He was obviously an ex-England international.
Yeah.
He had a smile on his face. He understood it all.
Did you sing? What did you sing?
I sung two. I sung Piano Man and The Only Fools and Horses. The Only Fools and Horses theme tune.
Brilliant. I did. I can't remember. I don't know what the name of it. You never close your eyes. I mean, how embarrassing is that? But they all just booed me and threw stuff at me. But I got away with it because I had injured my ankle. Jamie Joseph stood in it, and they let me off with only 15 shots. Too bad.
Right, well, that's it from us at Ruckit, Kieran Bracken and myself, Nick Easter. And we'll be back on Monday to review the weekend's matches. Thanks for listening.